explain why they do this and why they don't do that, so we can have an understanding and also understand any disagreements that might be out there and why some people say one way and some people say the other way. The laws of kashrus in general, particularly the laws of kashrus as they relate to Pesach, are found at the very end of Maseches Avodah Zarah. The Gemara in Mishnah, first Ashri in Avodah Zarah, number one on the sheet, explains etc. Basically, what it's saying is that there are different types of pots, different types of utensils that you use different ways. And depending on how you use the utensil, that will make a difference as to how you will make the utensil kosher. The source for this is actually the end of Sefer Bamidbar, Menuchemes Midyan. If you remember at the very end of the story of Balak and Bilam, Jewish men are enticed to sin. That leads to the downfall, the death of 24,000. And as revenge for that, Pinchas leads a battle against Midyan. And after being victorious in Midyan, there's a fair amount of spoils. And among the spoils they took from Midian were things that involved cooking food. There were knives, there were forks, there were pots, there were pans, etc. And since the Midianites did not keep kosher, it was necessary prior to using it that it became kosher. And we're told that depending on how they use it, that's how it becomes kosher. The basic rule is set forth in number two of these sources, and it says, Kibolo kach polto. Those are the key words. The same way that something is absorbed, that is how it gets, you get rid of it. What is the concern? What do I mean that there is a kosher pot? There is a non-kosher pot. Pots are made out of metal. Metal isn't kosher. It's not kosher. It's not edible. What it means is as follows. If I have myself a metal pot, and then I cook in it something that's not kosher, that food that is not kosher is going to be absorbed into the pot. And then later on, when I use the pot for something else, it will let it off. So therefore, if I have a non-kosher soup and I cook it, it will be absorbed in the pot. And then afterwards, when I cook my chicken soup for Shabbos afterwards, the taste of the non-kosher will come out of the pot and it will, in fact, enter my chicken soup and make it not kosher. Therefore, prior to cooking my chicken soup, I'm somehow or another going to have to get rid of that which is absorbed in the pot, which is now not kosher. Similarly, same idea. If I have something in my pot, if I have cooked fleishiks in my pot, the fleishiks gets absorbed into the pot. And then later on, if I cook milchiks, the fleishiks is, again, once it gets hot, it is released into the milchiks. And that makes basar b'chalav, that makes something not kosher. So when I say I have a kosher pot, I have a non-kosher pot, I have a milchik pot, I have a fleishik pot, whatever it is I say, right, that means that there's something that's been absorbed into it. And therefore, prior to using it, I'm going to have to get it out of my pot. How am I going to get it out of my pot? How am I going to get it out of my frying pan? How am I going to get it out of my cookie dish? The same way you get in, it's going to come out, right? So therefore, if I boiled something into the pot, I'm going to have to boil it out of the pot. If I went and I fried it in, it's going to have to be fried out. No matter what I did to absorb it, I'm going to have to do the opposite to release it. That is the basic rule of kibolo kach polto. So in the case that there is something, for example, I get a call and someone says, Rabbi, you have to, I accidentally cooked chicken soup in my milchik pot. Now, my pot is not kosher because there is milchik and fleishik in it. What I will tell you to do is you're going to have to put it into boiling water. That's called hagala, because the way it was absorbed through boiling is the way it's going to be released. On the other hand, if I went and I cooked something in the oven without liquid, that was absorbed directly, right, not through liquid, and therefore it's going to have to be released directly as well. These rules apply anytime I want to do this. It applies if I want, if it's a matter of milchigs and fleishigs. It applies if it's a matter of, if it's a matter of kosher and not kosher. And it also, right, if Dovi goes in professionally and there is, and he goes in to give a hashgacha and something's not kosher, he's going to have to kosher it first. Certain things are done by Hagala. They're put into boiling water. Certain things you need a blowtorch, right? Because it was put in directly through the fire, you're going to need the fire to get it out. That's called libun. The word libun is actually from the word lavan, white, because you want it to be white hot. You want it to be sparking. That's how hot libun is. So again, it depends what I am doing. That is the general rule. Now, there is an exception. The Gemara tells us that there are in number three in Avodah Zarah, that in, even though in general we say kabolo kach polto, there are times when we can be more lenient. What is an example of where we can be more lenient? So the Gemara tells us as follows. So there are different levels, right? Putting something in boiling water is the simplest way of koshering something, right? I use my milchig spoon for my fleishik, for my cholent, very standard rabbi call, right? The answer is throw it in the boiling water, not a biggie, right? However, in the event that I actually cooked it in the oven, that's going to require libun. That's going to require more heating. That's a more serious type. However, the Gemara tells us there are certain times when we can rely on the less serious type. And what would that be? That would be a case of hetera bala. There are two different times I want to kosher something. One case is I made a treif. I accidentally cooked a pig in my chilen pot. We know it happens to everyone from time to time. At some point, I noticed the squealing. Say, oy vey, there went Wilbur. Right? Because of that, now my pot is treif. What's in the pot is not kosher, right? That is called isura. It is asur. It is prohibited. And that's going to require libun. However, what if I had a par pot and I cooked milchig in it? What's the status of the pot now? The pot at this point isn't not kosher, right? The pot is doing fine. However, at this point, my pot is milchig. Not a big deal. If I would want to make my pot parv again, there are other problems with that, I would not have to do libun, but hagola would be enough. Because in the case of hetera bala, if the thing that was absorbed is mutter, it's allowed, but I just want to get rid of it, right? That would be okay. The Gemara is talking about a case that doesn't come up anymore, karbanos. A carbon, right, we spoke about last time, for example, of a carbon toda. A carbon toda is a carbon that's brought that has to be eaten within a day. Now, what if I took my meat from my carbon toda and I made a nice goulash out of it? Right, that's fine. I can add some potatoes, right? I can add a little paprika, whatever. I can make myself a nice thing out of it. But I've got to eat it all in a day. Now, the pot that I cooked my carbon in is going to absorb the carbon. And after the time passes, that pot's going to become not kosher. Why? Because it's what's called nosar. There is left over from the carbon in there. It's lasted too long. It had to be eaten in a day. So that pot has to be koshered. But we say there that that kashrus only requires hagala. It only requires the lower form of kashrus, because at the time it was absorbed, there was no problem with it. This leads to a very important machokas, perhaps the most important machokas regarding kashrus on Pesach. And that is as follows. So here we are, and I have a dish that I used during the year. And it's a kosher dish. It's a fine dish, but it's chametz dik. And now I want to use it for Pesach. I have a knife that I use. You know, whatever it is, I have silverware that I use. Right? I decide that I want to use my silverware for Pesach. So how do I kosher it? So in general, the rule should be kabolo kach polto. Certain things I can just boil, But other things will be much more difficult. I'm actually going to have to heat them to the point where they become glowing hot, right? I'll have to pull out the blowtorch, as we say. But that would only apply if I say that, what? That it is Isura Bola. That's a question. Chametz, when it is absorbed, what is the status? Well, right now, if I want to go eat chametz, there's no problem. Right now, it's not Pesach. It's only going to become a problem in a week from now. So it's going to be a problem in a week from now. Is that the same as the carbon? That right now the carbon is kosher. I can eat it, but in a day from now, it's going to be a problem? Or is that something else? So source number 5, which we're not going to do inside, talks about what does it take to kosher a knife for Pesach. Now, how does a knife become fleishix, for example? So the way a knife becomes fleishix is I have a steak, and I cut the steak with the knife, and the meat goes directly into the knife from the meat into the knife. Therefore, since there's no liquid in between, I technically should have to go and do liban. I should go and have to put this directly into the fire to make it kosher. However, it says, well, that's the case in general. On Pesach, you just can put it in boiling water. What's the reason for that? So Tosfos in number five explains the reason that this is true is because chametz on Pesach is considered hetera bala. Chametz on Pesach is considered that it was absorbed something that was kosher. And therefore, when I'm kashering it before Pesach, I am getting rid of something that's kosher. And therefore, all that I require is Haggalah. Everything that I do for Pesach, all I have to do is put it in boiling water. It doesn't matter how I use it during the year. Just get myself a vat of boiling water. Whatever I throw in there becomes kosher of Pesach. No problem whatsoever.
Because but if you wanted to do the koshering on Pesach, then you'd have to do Libun?
Correct. If you want to do the koshering on Pesach, you'd have two problems. One is you're owning chametz on Pesach. That's arguably a problem that you got here. But two, yes, you would have to do Libun according to everybody. Because at that point, it's Isur Abola.
Right. Okay.
Right? So that is absolutely correct. So according to this opinion, this is a very big kula. Because if anybody calls me up and says, Rabbi, how do I kosher my, fill it in for Pesach? Throw it in boiling water. Your knives, your forks, your baking trays, your food processor, cleaning lady, whatever it is you have to kosher for Pesach, just throw it in boiling water. Everything is mutter. Everything is fine. It would be much, according to this opinion of Rabbeinu Tam, that's quoted in the Tosfos here, the idea is that chametz, again, chametz right now is allowed. There's nothing wrong with eating chametz today, right? You can eat chametz without any question. Hey, right? And what was that? Was there a question?
Yeah, but you said about the chametz pot that the problem is you're owning chametz. I didn't think we sold our kalim. I only thought we sold our chametz.
Correct. So again, what we usually do is what we tell people is you sell your chametz in the kalim. Now, again, I mentioned that in passing. The truth of the matter is, we said last time, you're only over the Avera if you have a Kazayas, and you're not going to have a Kazayas inside of it, which is why you are right, it is not a problem ultimately. But Yitzchak is also right in saying that absolutely, according to all opinions, if you're going to kosher something on Pesach for Pesach, right, then that's going to require whatever it would require during the year. There is no idea. It is considered at that point, for sure, Isura Bala, because the chametz by Pesach is at that point, for sure, Aser. This is the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam. As you might have guessed, not everybody agrees on this. Right? We have here the opinion of the Ramban in number 6. The Ramban in number 6 turns around and says that that's not true. That it's unlike a carbon. A carbon, the meat itself goes from one status to another, right? What was kadosh as a carbon will become nosar. As time passes, the status of the food itself changes. Chametz never changes. If I eat a loaf of bread today, it is chametz. If I eat a loaf of bread on Pesach, it is chametz. The difference is that one day I'm allowed to eat chametz and the other day I'm not allowed to eat chametz. As opposed to the carbon, I can eat a carbon at either time. But the carbon, the food itself changes status. So since it's not, since unlike the case of the carbon, where the food is changing status, if I get it out before it changes status, I can do that in a makel way. He says chametz is different. Chametz will always be chametz, and therefore it is considered isura bala. It is considered that it has absorbed something that is not allowed. And because it is isura bala, because it has absorbed something that's not allowed, we will always require the same types of kashering for chametz as we were if we were kashering something that was treif. And therefore, depending if you're going to kasher your knives for Pesach, there's one way to do it. If you're going to kasher your spoon, there's another way to do it. Right? This leads it to be much more difficult. Like all great machlokes.
So I have a problem with this.
Yes.
So according to the Ramban, let's say I had a breaded chicken cutlet.
Yes.
And I cooked it and I had a par of a pot. And a pan, and I cook this in the parva pan. Now I say, you know what? I want to make this thing parv again. So I do hagolah, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now I say, okay, I want to use this for Pesach.
So it is still chametzdik. It is parv and chametzdik. That is correct.
So it's parv and chametzdik. So I got rid of the meat.
But you didn't get rid of the
chametz. But I didn't get rid of the chametz.
Correct.
That's kind of strange.
It's no stranger than the general difference between hetera bala and isura bala. So again, okay. Whatever question you have is a question not on the specific case, but it's on the general rule. Why do I, what's the difference? Yeah. Obviously the difference is in some cases I have to get out X, and in other cases, I have to get out Y.
Is there another way to get rid of it in order to make it not chametz at this point?
Right, so that point you would do a Liban. If you would do a Liban, that would be fine. That would be the idea behind it. I should just mention, by the way, a halacha, again, it's since we're banding it about, our minhag is not to kosher things from milchik to fleishik. Right, that's the reason we don't do that is because it'll lead to confusion. Right, if I show up one day and I decide, you know, I'm going to go make myself a steak, and I take out a pan to make it in, and yesterday was fleishik, but my wife kashered it and made it milchik, and she forgot to tell me, I've got problems. So therefore, in general, we don't go from milchik to fleishik. However, when you kasher for Pesach, you can switch at that point. As a by the way. So again, we have two opinions, Hetera Bala or Isura Bala. The Mordechai in number 7 comes up with a compromise. The Mordechai is a centrist. And the Mordechai introduces us to a concept of Libun Kal and Libun Chomer. When I said we have to do Libun, I said Libun is from the word Lavan. It has to be white hot. In fact, it has to be so hot, we are told by the Rishonim, that sparks have to be coming off of it. That is what we call Libun Chomer. That is a hard, a serious form of Libun. However, the Mordechai introduces a concept of what's called Libun Kal. Libun light, literally. Libun Kal, you don't have to make it so hot that it's actually going to shoot off sparks. It just has to be hot enough that if you take a piece of straw and you touch it to it, it'll catch fire. Practically, what does that mean? So according to the official OU, Dafa Kashrus, according to the OU rules, the OU says that Lieben Kal, what's that, Lieben Chomer, is 900 degrees. If I want to get something hot enough to be considered Lieben, that should be white hot, it has to go up to 900 degrees. That's hot. Now 900 degrees, which is, I think, a mere 500 Celsius. But don't worry, they'll tell you in Arizona, it's a dry heat, so it's not a big deal. This, right, that is, in fact, if you turn a typical pot that you have at home, if you put it in up at 900 degrees, it will in all likelihood ruin the pot. Right, the plastic handles will melt, it will become warped, etc. Lieben Kal, according to the OU, it depends how long you're running your oven. If you run it at 550 degrees, it reaches that level after 1 hour, 450 after an hour and a half, 375 after 2 hours. That is the official OU rules that they give out to their mashgichim. So again, that's a big difference. You can easily heat something to 375, your pots, and probably to 550 as well, right, without ruining the pot. So the question is, how do we paskin? Do we require, like the Ramban says, do we say that is Isura Bala? And since it is Isura Bala, therefore we have to go up to 900 degrees, which would be, in most cases, difficult, to say the least, to reach in the case of the in the case that we're talking about, in the case of pots or a knife or etc. Right, if you put in a knife with a wooden handle, it would burn. Right, it becomes something that's just not practical. Or can you rely on Hagala like Rabbeinu Tam or Lieben Kal like the Mordechai? So let's take a look at the Shulchan Aruch. With that background, we can understand what the Shulchan Aruch is talking about. The Shulchan Aruch in number 8 says as follows. I'm sure he'll catch up with us. He says, Kelim shemishtamshim behem ayidei ha'or. Right? This means that things that I use directly on the fire, kegon shpudim, like a spit, va'as kalaos, or like grates. Right, these are things that I'm putting directly on the fire. Ukayotzi behem tzrichin liban, v'haliban hu ashe yiyu nitzotzos nitozin mehem. It has to, for that, I have to use liban, and the liban has to be so hot that it has to be sparking. Now, is this talking about regular, or is this talking about Pesach? How can you tell? So in the Shulchan Aruch, there are two sets of halachas. There's halachas of Kashrus, that's in Yoredeya, and there's halachas of Pesach, that's in Arachayim. Are these halachas found? Where is number 8? Number 8 is clearly in Arachayim. It's talking about Pesach. So who is the Shulchan Aruch following? The Shulchan Aruch follows the opinion of the Ramban. The Shulchan Aruch is being machmir. And therefore saying that if you want to kasher something like that for Pesach, you're going to have to turn it up to 900 degrees. That's for the Sfaradim. So again, Jeff Hecht. That's what you're going to do. What about the Ashkenazim among us? What about the Ramah? So the Ramah says as follows, Hagar. Also number 8, v'yesh mekilin, and there are those that are lenient. Im nisraben kol kach she'akash nisraf alav mibachutz. If it becomes hot enough, not that it sparks, but if it is just hot enough that if you would touch it with straw, it would catch fire, that's hot enough. And he quotes, who is that? That's the Mordechai. How do we follow, though? He said, v'noagim kesvara rishona, v'chol dova shedino b'libun. He said that, in fact, we are machmir, and we follow the Shulchan Aruch. We do only Liban as well. This is the Ramah. However, if there's something that by and large requires Hagala, however, because it has a handle or something, because of that, we are machmir to do libun in that case. Resh bo sedakim o shemachmil alav, no, for whatever reason, there are gaps in it. Sagi believe on kal kazeh, that this is enough, that all you have to do is this libun kal, that's enough. The Mishnah Berurah picks up on this, and the Mishnah Berurah says, in fact, this is a machlokes. He said, the truth of the matter is, in general, what are we going to do? We're going to try to follow the opinion of the Ramban. That's what the Shulchan Aruch says. That's what the Ramah says we should try to do. That's the Minug, he says. And therefore, in general, when we kasher something, if it's the type of thing that in general would require a libun, we require a libun for Pesach as well. We don't have any additional leniencies because of that. However, he says, Ladina Iker Kadasa Machaber de Chomet Mikri Isura Bola. Bao Kochotur Libun Tov Shehu Nitzosos Nitozumimenu. Bao Filo Bidievich Esher Asam Nishtamsu Baba Pesach. He says, what if I just did Haggalah when it requires Libun? Can I rely on Rabbeinu Tam? He says, no. He says, however, Achein B'Makom Hefse Meruba. But if there's a place where it's going to cost me a lot of money, what's the story? So let's say I'm in Eretz Yisrael, and I only have one set of pots, and I can't afford to buy another set of pots. And if I would take my pots and I would do Libun on them, they'd be destroyed. So the Mishnah Berurah says, if you find yourself in a difficult situation where you don't have an option, then you can rely on Rabbeinu Tam. That, you know, that Me'ikar Adem, Ashkenazim, and Sfardim both should not rely on this. But if someone finds himself in a situation where they really have no option, there is that option. Omeni Yassim Chasyotav, who eno ben yombo me'eshin esamsu bobo hachametz. Yesh lismoch b'di'evet ha'poskim to some of the chametz mikri hetera bala. So he says that if you're really stuck, you can do this. Now, there's something else that we need to know here. There's another difference between hetera bala and isura bala. In general, when we kasher something, we tend to wait 24 hours before we kasher it. Why do we have such a halacha? So we said the concern always is that I cook something in a pot and now it's been absorbed. Now after it's been absorbed, I'm going to cook something else that's going to come out. And therefore, if I'm going to cook my pig and then my chicken soup, I'm going to serve the chicken soup and they'll say, there's a nice taste to it. And you don't want the taste of the bacon to get into the chicken soup. However, after 24 hours, it's what's called no same tam lifgam, that over time, the taste dies out. So after 24 hours, the truth is, midoraisa, according to the Torah, we might be good as is. So when something is isura bala, if something absorbs something that's not kosher, we in fact wait 24 hours first for it to die down, and then we kasher it. Just to mention quickly, this is a machlokas we mentioned.
Rabbi, what's yesterday. The story of something's been a year?
So the year is, there is a Chacham Tzvi. The Chacham Tzvi has an opinion that after a year, everything becomes so pogam, it goes back to its original opinion, right? That is what Ted had mentioned to me earlier in the week. That if something hasn't been used for a long time, then it becomes, you don't have to kasher it. That is a minority opinion that we don't follow. However, we will from time to time rely on it together with other opinions. Among the Hasidim who generally don't eat gebraks, but do eat gebraks on the last day of Pesach. Anybody have that minog? Duvi, you have that minog?
My dad, Al Vashalom, was that way.
Okay.
And so, he always defended it by telling me it was a year, and I always argued that it's a year minus a week.
Correct. I could, again, having never met your father, I can still very much imagine this conversation.
Yeah.
Right? So again, the year isn't 300. It's close. That's what they do. Your father was correct that was the reason for it. Since everyone knows that Gebrucks really isn't a thing. And it was just a Chumra Ba'alma, So in that case, you rely on the Chacham Tzvi. That was a case where they would rely on it, right? Because it's been a year. In general, we don't rely on that. We rely as a tzirif, but not on its own. That on its own is not something that we rely on. In the case of Gebrux, that's an exception because we don't really think Gebrux was a problem to start with. So to take care of something that wasn't a problem, it's good enough for that.
Just as a technical small point, Nilsen Tam Lufgam simply means that the taste dissipates. It doesn't mean that it has a negative connotation.
We assume it means it dissipates, even though the words pagum sounds like that it becomes worse. Right. We just assume it becomes weak enough that it doesn't matter anymore.
Okay.
So that is what how we take it to mean. Right, it's interesting. There are cases where we will, in fact, be lenient, even if it wasn't 24 hours. For example, that if you washed it out with soap, a lot of people are lenient because the soap is already pogame the taste on its own. So that would be a way to get around it, according to some opinions. So in general, if it's hetera bala, though we don't require it. There's a case that we talk about from time to time, and that is the case of the mango sorbet. The Haagen-Dazs mango sorbet says on it, OUD. What does it mean that it's OUD? So what OUD does not mean is that some people think it means that it's milchig. It doesn't mean that. Some people think it means that it was made with milchig machinery, and therefore you should not eat it together with fleishigs. It actually doesn't mean that either. In Haagen-Dazs, they use the same machinery to make all their flavors. So first they'll have a vanilla run, then they'll have a chocolate run, then they'll have a dulce de leche, and then they don't make cherry Garcia, whatever, vanilla Swiss almond. They'll go one after another. Now, I don't want my vanilla to taste like chocolate. So when they're done doing the chocolate, they're going to take steam, they're going to steam down the machines to totally clear out everything. So the next run doesn't have the taste. The steaming is good enough to kosher it. Now between vanilla and chocolate, I don't need it koshered. But between chocolate and mango sorbet, I do want it koshered. So therefore, when I go and I steam down the machines, it becomes parv again. And therefore, the mango sorbet is not even milchig machinery, it's parv machinery. So it's not. So the question is, why did they put a D on it? The reason is because of the Lubavitchers. There are people out there that are careful about Chol Yisrael, and they think that Chol Yisrael is actually treif. If you hold that Chol Non Yisrael, meaning the Chol Yishmael, is treif, and you don't wait 24 hours to kosher it, right, then it's not going to work. So according to them, the kashering doesn't work because it's isura bala. And therefore, when you run the mango sorbet, it's on treif machinery. And therefore, according to them, the mango sorbet is treif. So according to some people, the mango sorbet is parv. According to some people, it's treif. But according to nobody, it's milchix. And according to nobody, it's milchix materials, right? So according, if you don't care about Chol Yisrael, you can put your mango sorbet on salami and there's no problem with it. They just put the D on it to warn people who care about Chol Yisrael.
And confuse the rest of us.
What was that? Right.
And confuse the rest of us.
How's it working?
Well.
See?
They As should we put say, a T for treif.
Right. So, and that wouldn't be confusing.
No.
Right. It's, you know what it is? As we say this time of year, it's Kadesha Yishalu HaTainokos HaKatanos.
There we go. Right? You're getting the questions.
But why don't they just use a different letter? Why D? I mean, that is setting it up for confusion.
Right. So that's it. So the bottom line is, believe it or not, the OU has just changed policy.
Okay.
The OU is bringing back the DE.
Ah, that would make more sense.
Right, the OU got rid of the DE for years because they thought this was somehow clearer. Now they realize that people are just further confused So they're bringing back the DE.
Thank you.
But Rabbi, you just got through explaining that it's not really DE.
Right, but it's not D either. It's closer to DE than it is to D.
Okay, I'll give you that.
What it should really say, which would be really confusing, if they wanted to be accurate, it should say OU Parv, not Chol of Yisrael. Right, that is the accurate way of stating it. And you could imagine
that would make the most sense.
Yes and no. You know, on the one hand, it would make sense. On the other hand, it would lead to a significant amount of confusion.
But why not then use a totally different letter? Don't use DE, use Q or something.
That'll be obvious. I don't know. I guess they perhaps should go and buy a vowel. Or consonant, for that matter, where that would be fine as well. Moving right along, so based on what we said, there's an interesting rush in number 10. The rush in number 10, which has been waiting so nicely.
Rabbi, if steam is good enough to change it from milchix to parv, why isn't it good enough to kosher our counters?
So who said it isn't?
Bad.
I never said it isn't.
You think using a steamer and steaming your countertops
is steamer?
It's as hot as boiling water to get steam.
So again, does it get up to 500 degrees, 600 degrees?
I don't know. I never measured.
Right. So again, industrial steamers get very, very hot. They get hotter, much hotter than the water, right? God forbid something gets burnt with steam, it's worse than getting burnt with water because it gets much hotter. My wife, the chemist, could explain somehow or another. Hi, is that true? Does steam get hotter than water?
It can, yeah.
It can, yeah. That was the official thing. So again, if you have a hot enough steamer, yeah, absolutely. Most kashering is done, I believe, in the kashrus business using steamers because they get much, much hotter. Based on what we said, the Rush makes an odd comment. The Rush says that when you kasher your items for Pesach, you don't have to wait 24 hours. Now, what does that sound like? What that sounds like is what we're saying is that when we're talking about kashering for Pesach, it sounds like hetera bola. That sounds like the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam. It sounds like it's hetera bola. Since it's hetera bola, that's why you don't have to wait. If it was isura bola, right? If it was like the non-kosher, we would have to wait 24 hours first. So you'd assume that the Shulchan Aruch disagrees, but oddly enough, the Shulchan Aruch does agree with this. And the Shulchan Aruch says you don't have to wait 24 hours. And the Ramah agrees. In number 11, the Shulchan Aruch says, Yishri Zorah Hagil, etc. Do it when it's still time. And he says, Kadesh Ro Yitzarech Adaktik Yimakelim B'nei Yoman Olav. You don't have to wait, care to see if we waited 24 hours or not. Well, wait a second, that's so odd. He's, of course, we understand, as Yitzhak said, if you're going to kasher it on Pesach, or even Erev Pesach, after you can't have chametz anymore, yes, of course, at that point, you're going to have to do Liban, etc. It's Isura Bala. We understand that. But why, and that's the case, you should wait 24 hours. Why is it different beforehand? So the Mishnah Berurah, number 12, explains, I don't understand that at all. The Mishnah Berurah says there seems to be a stira, there seems to be a disagreement between, on the one hand, the Shulchan Aruch, and on the other hand, the Shulchan Aruch. On the one hand, the Ramah. On the other hand, the Ramah. There seems to be a great disagreement between the two of them. And it just doesn't make any sense. And therefore, the Shulchan Aruch says that we don't follow the Mishnah Berurah says one should not rely on this. And before someone kashers something for Pesach, you should wait 24 hours, even though the Shulchan Aruch says you don't have to. This is the basis for the tradition that many communities have to do the public kashering on Sundays. People think we always do it on Sundays. Why? because Sunday's the most convenient day. That's why we do it on Sunday. People are off on Sunday. The truth is that's part of it. But more importantly is because we assume that people don't cook on Shabbos. So when they bring in their items on Sunday, it'll be at least 24 hours since you've used it. What if I didn't wait 24 hours? Can I rely on the Shulchan Aruch? So the Chazon Ish says yes. The Chazon Ish has a different understanding of the Mishnah Berurah, and based on his understanding of the Mishnah Berurah, he assumes that it's not of the Shulchan Aruch, he assumes that it's not a problem. So we'll see that in certain cases we will be makel here. In certain cases, we'll encourage people to wait 24 hours beforehand. In general, the Rashba is asked a very simple question. The Rashba is asked, how do you kasher a cup? Now, in general, when it comes to kashering cups, right? So what I always tell people is technically juice cups. Most people have a minhag in their house. They have milchig and fleishig juice cups. The truth of the matter is anything that doesn't have a handle on it really is by definition parv. Because if a cup doesn't have a handle on it, inevitably you're not going to use it for something hot. If I'm going to pour myself a coffee with milk, or I'm going to pour myself a tea or a hot cocoa or a Lipton cup of soup, I'm going to pour it into a mug. Why? Because I want a handle. I'm not going to hold it straight. I'm going to burn my hands. But even a mug or something like that, it only gets what? It only gets water, hot water poured into it. Before the days of microwaves, you're never going to cook something in a mug. Right? So the question is, how do you kasher something like that? So the Rashba says, the truth be told, if it's something that you use for cold, just wash it out. You don't really have to kasher it at all. The truth of the matter is, the same juice cups that we use during the year, you can use it for Pesach also. Even if I poured into it milk, or I poured into it juice, etc., technically it should be allowed. However, the Rashba says we traditionally change it.
But don't people in a dishwasher?
What was that?
But if you put those juice cups in a dishwasher, doesn't it then change its status?
Probably not. The truth of the matter is, it doesn't. I mean, do you have bread in your dishwasher?
Things that have had bread on them.
Right, but there is no bread, right? So the idea that we're concerned that's going to transfer from your plate that you ate toast on. Truth of the matter is, me'ikar adin, it's not an issue. However, okay. Rashba introduced this idea that mishum chumer the chametz, because we said chametz is much more serious than any other kashrus issue. Any other kashrus issue is an isra lav, you get malchus. This is more serious, you get kares. So because of that, we say that we are machmir. And we go and we get ourselves different juice cups, even though technically the old one should be fine. Similarly, the Shulchan Aruch says there's lots of things, right? Our tables. Your table doesn't really become chametz dik, right? You don't cook things on your table, right? You might spill something on your table, but the things that you spill on the table, what is it? A klisheni, a klishlishi, right? You take something out of the pot, you put it on your plate, it maybe spills off your plate at this point. How hot is it already? Even though, right, that technically that's a fair argument to make. And you know, and if somebody was out on a hike, because man, that we used to do things on Chol Moed, if you go on the hike, you probably could eat on the picnic bench, even though the park didn't kasher it beforehand. Our tradition is not to. These things are not really so much technical halacha, right? These more so are issues of traditions that we have. So there are a lot of things that aren't technical, but because of the tradition, we cover we kasher the countertops, right? We go and we cover the tables, right? We wash it down and then we put a plastic over it or aluminum foil, whatever we do. Even though that technically these are not required, these are traditions that are quoted. in the Shulchan Aruch. So the idea of doing the tables, etc., that's in number 15, and the idea of the glasses is number 14, etc. But again, the Mishnah Berurah points out that the truth of the matter is that b'di'evad, you don't have to worry about this. In the event you're in a situation where there's a table, as we said, in a park, it's not chametz stick. Nothing was ever cooked on it. You're not putting anything hot on it. You really don't have to worry about this technically. Skipping to number 17, it's time to talk about some different materials. We know that metal can be koshered. We know that earthenware cannot be koshered, right? Anything that's porcelain, etc., you can't kosher it. Done. What about glass? Glass is an interesting story. The Shulchan Aruch says, "Kli zechuchis, glass utensils, afil machnisim lekiyum, afil mishtamshim ben bechamin, ein tzrichim shum hechsher she'in abolim." According to the Shulchan Aruch, is an amazing kula. He says glass is non-porous, and because of that, you can use it for milchiks and fleishiks and treif and chometz and pesach and everything. That is the opinion of the Shulchan Aruch, and I believe that is how Svardim paskin. Glass is the magic material. You don't have to kosher it. You never get a problem. Yes, Perry?
Yeah, that's how the true Svardim paskin. That's how we hold. My mother used glass. No handles, no cups. We never had a cup in our house. And she never koshered any of this because she said it was, you didn't have to.
Right? Your mother was a wise man.
Yep.
Jeff, you want to chime in here?
I will defer to my elder Perry and say I agree with him.
Okay.
Whoa. Wow.
Now this has been a big day. Right? So that is the Sephardic approach. Glass is the wonder material. And yes, your mother was a very wise woman because you can never go wrong. Because whatever you do, you can't trafe it. If I use my milchik cup for fleishiks, or my fleishik for milchiks, or if I accidentally, the cleaning lady took it to McDonald's and filled it up with a cup of soup, it's all good. And I can still, and if it was a noodle soup, I can still use it on Pesach.
Okay.
That is the Svardic approach. However, that is not what the Ramah says. The Ramah says, "V'yesh machmir moment the kli zechuchas afilu hagolohanila." Ashkenazim are way on the other side of the spectrum. They say that not only can't you use it for both, but it's like earthenware, and once it becomes treif, there's nothing you can do about it. You have to throw it out. Really, the exact opposite. It is not the wonder material, but it's the disaster material. You cannot kosher it for Pesach. There's nothing you can do about it. V'chein ha-minog ba-Ashkenaz, and that is what our tradition is in Ashkenaz. U'v'meninos elu. They do that in Germany and also around Radin, around Poland, where the Ramo is from. V'chein kli kesef sheyesh b'sochen ha-toch z'chuchitz, k'gon geshmelzt. If there was a silver cup that had glass in it, this was an ancient tradition. In fact, if in the time of Achashverosh, they had golden cups. I'm not an expert in this. Maybe Alex knows more about this. But supposedly, when you drink wine out of gold, it tastes terrible. Yossi, ever try it?
When you drink wine from a silver cup, it doesn't taste as good as from a glass. Try
correct.
It
absolutely.
On a good, expensive wine, and you'll see the difference.
That's because correct. Silver and gold, which are close to being inert but are not, will react with the acid in the wine, which is why some of the very expensive Kiddush cups are coated with glass on the inside.
Correct. So that's what the Ramah says, that they used to coat all the metal cups with glass inside, and because they did that, you couldn't kosher them. Again, if you're a Svardi, you're set. You're an Ashkenazi, you're stuck. Right, so that's what we do. We don't kosher glass because we follow this opinion. Now, we are aware of the other opinions, and therefore the Mishnah Berurah says, if you're stuck, if let's say I have a glass cup, but I only use it generally for cold, maybe one time I put a hot cocoa in there, he said, then you can rely on that. He said, since the majority of the time it wasn't used that way, even though it's glass, and since there are opinions that allows you to do glass, you can make your gebruchs in that cup as well. So that's the idea that he says, that the Mishnah Berurah says, if a person is stuck, you can rely on this. The last material I wanted to talk about is plastic. According to the opinion of the Minchas Yitzchak, Dayan Weiss, who was the chief rabbi in Manchester, England, before going to the head of the Eidah Haredus, he is of the opinion that in certain cases you can kosher plastic for Pesach. Ramosha Feinstein in number 20 disagrees. Now, with that background, we should discuss practical cases. The most major issue that people come to me with is koshering ovens. Now, the real answer is, how should you kosher your oven? Your oven requires libun. And libun, as we said, really means libun chomer. Means that how hot do you have to get it? You have to get it up to 900 degrees. If you turn your oven on self-cleaning, you know how hot it gets? 900 degrees. It happens to be that a self-cleaning oven exactly hits the right number. So therefore, people who have a self-cleaning oven, you're set. What I will tell you to do is first, clean it out well. Again, you shouldn't be any chametz be'en, right? So if you want to be careful, easy off it first. Then you do it on that setting. And once you do it on that setting, you are set. That's all it is. It is kosher. Some opinions say that you still have a problem because of the glass. That according to this opinion, glass cannot be koshered, and therefore some people are machmir to cover up the glass. I don't think a person has to. I think based on the opinion that there are opinions that you can kosher glass, and what we're not really worried that much about putting the food on the glass directly. It's just a matter of zeya, of steam coming out. That should be enough. Not only that, but when you kosher it, I would recommend you leave your racks in there. And not only that, you can take the range, the grates from the range on top, and put them in the oven as well. By doing that, you kosher everything. And with that, you are set. So again, if you have a self-cleaning oven, you're in good shape. If you don't have a self-cleaning oven, then it's a little bit trickier because you're not going to be able to get it up to 900 degrees. So as Yossi will tell you, the old tradition is you pull out the blowtorch. People are not excited about the blowtorch for two reasons. My father tells a story that when he was a young man, he used to make money about the weeks before Pesach going around koshering things with his blowtorch. Yossi, you want to comment on this? As I understand, this is an area of expertise.
You didn't kosher mine.
She wouldn't let me.
But Leah Mailer let you.
Exactly.
She lets, but I didn't. I used boiling water and I used a self-cleaning oven.
Right. The reason that people aren't excited about it too is, one is it's dangerous. It's not a good idea. The second issue is it's very difficult to get. It's a very small flame, right? So to get if I'm going to turn it on self-cleaning, I know everything's going to turn that hot. But if I'm going to go with the flame piece by piece, heating it up, that's very hard to do. Therefore, if people don't have a self-cleaning oven, we rely on other things. First, as we tell you, let it sit for 24 hours. A. Then we tell you to do libun kal. Turn it up to 550 degrees and let it go for at least an hour at 550. Right? At that point, you'll reach the level of libun kal. And we said that according to the opinions of the Mordechai and the Rabbeinu Tam, that's good enough. So that is one reason to be Mekel. Another reason to be Mekel is we said it's Kabolo Kach Polto, that the same way it got in, it gets out. And if you turn the oven as hot as it gets, right, it couldn't have got in at a hotter level than that. So there are opinions that will tell you that Kabolo Kach Polto, that in fact, that is good enough, that in fact, it will go and it will get out. Also, as we said, we do not put the food directly, unlike in the olden days, when they talk about in the Gemara, the way they used to make bread, they would take the dough and they would slap it on the side of the oven. Nowadays, we don't do that anymore, right? We put it on a tray. So therefore, the level of concern is not as great for that as well. So therefore, if someone does not have a self-cleaning oven, we will tell them to let it clean it out, let it sit for 24 hours, and there and then do what we call libun kal as much as you can. What about the grates? To the extent possible, if possible, change the grates as well. That is what we would tell you for that. What about a microwave? What do we do about microwaves? Microwaves are very interesting in general, because unlike your typical oven, which the walls become hot, and that heat from the walls heat up the inside, the microwave is reversed. The microwave, you're heating up the food, and to the extent that the walls get hot at all, it's because of the steam of the food. Since the walls of the microwave don't really get hot, there is a very strong argument that can be made that microwaves are like the Sephardi glass, meaning that they never become milchig, they never become fleishig, they never become treif, they never become chametz stick. Because the only heat you're going to get is from the steam that comes out, and that's never going to heat the walls all that much. If you ever run something in your microwave, open it up to take everything, instead touch the walls. The walls will be cool to the touch. Since the walls never really heated up, the walls never absorbed anything. Therefore, the truth be told, we can be pretty makel when it comes to microwaves. And when it comes to Pesach, what I'll tell you to do is the only thing to get rid of is the glass tray before under it, because something could have spilled on it, right? That glass tray will absorb, not because of the cooking process, but because of you heated your pizza on a paper plate and it went through, or you heated your chicken soup and as you pulled it out, you spilled some. So that could potentially be a problem. But in terms of the microwave itself, just clean it out. Obviously, if there's schmutz, that's chametz, that's got to go. And then boil a cup of water in there. Once your steam from the water comes out, whatever problem was there will be taken out. And with that, it's perfectly kosher for Pesach. Again, the people are machmir by glass doors will be machmir here as well. But again, that's not something necessarily that you have to worry about. So in terms of that koshering, that would not be a problem. I added onto the sheet as the final item, the unnumbered psak by Rav Schechter. Rav Schechter, as people might be aware, has been coming out with psake halacha specifically related to coronavirus. There's a series of 15 of them online. Some of them he translated to English, some of them he did not. Most of them actually were translated to English, if anyone's interested in looking them up. The only one that I've noticed was not translated is the question, if there are two sick people and one ventilator, what do you do with that? I guess he probably didn't want that as publicized as this psak. So Rav Schechter says that in general, dishwashers have issues with them. So he said, regarding the use of a dishwasher that was used for chametz, if all the materials of the walls are metal, even though the metal may contain a certain percentage of porcelain, since the metal is the majority, we can kosher the dishwasher for Pesach. Ashkenazim have a minhag to kosher glass utensils for Pesach, therefore even if only part of the inside wall, the dishwasher consists of glass, there's a knot missing there. Would not be kosher. So again, if there's any glass involved, we don't do it. Svardim, as we said, don't have a problem with that. then one should run an empty dishwasher on full cycle. The cleaning cycle should run with just burning hot water and no detergent. If many people in the home are using hot water at the time, the water in the dishwasher may not be hot enough. The custom of the Ashkenazim is that kashering should only be done in order to remove the status of something that is treif for chametz. However, it should not be done to make from dairy into parv or to meat. In general, the kashering of a dishwasher in this manner relies on a number of leniencies. And in general, there is no great need. One should not rely on this approach. Well, what leniencies are we relying on there? Well, we're relying on one that's not libun, right? Me'ikra, then we want the libun. This is some form of hagala. A, right? B, if it's not only metal, there's other issues where we're relying on that it's mostly metal. So again, there are several things that we don't. So Rabbi Shalta thinks that in the event that there's no plastic inside, it's a straight metal dishwasher, and for some reason there's a great need, right? This year, people at home didn't expect it, don't have help, whatever it is. There, Rabbi Shalta thinks that there is room to be medical to kosher your dishwasher. However, in general, he's not a big fan of it.
What about the rack?
What? So again, if the rack is metal, you can kosher it this way. If not, it's going to have to be removed and replaced.
Got it.
So these are the highlights of what it takes. This is the background in general, what we're talking about koshering for Pesach.
If anyone has any questions now, feel free. I'll unmute.
Before that, I'll just comment that again, this is the first of our two Shabbos Shuvah Drasha. This is the Thursday Shuvah Drasha. That'll be followed by the Sunday Shuvah Drasha. I've actually...
Gadol.
Shabbos Gadol, sorry. Gadol, thank you. I'm actually a little sad giving this year because I'm supposed to be on a plane right now. That this was my flight out. We had arranged, thanks to Avi and Shlomo and Steve, that the schedule worked out that I was actually supposed to, for the first time in many years, give the Shabbos Shuvah Drasha and be there for the Shabbos HaGadol Drasha and the Shabbos Pesach and the Shabbos afterwards. Unfortunately for us, it didn't work out. And here we are in the epicenter, thankfully staying well.
Danny Goldstein has a question about how to sell chametz online. Maybe you want to discuss how we're going to
Okay, so we'll open for questions. Yes.
Danny Goldstein says, how do I sell chametz online?
So there will be an email going out either tonight or tomorrow. It will have a link on it, and together it'll have instructions. As you know, I wait longer than other people, much to the chagrin, I'm sure, of many people involved. Benji... Last, Yishevu Rafur Shaleva tends to complain more because it's his job. But the rule, as we had mentioned in previous years, is that once you sell your chametz, you're authorizing the rabbi to sell all the chametz in your possession at that time. Any chametz you get afterwards requires a new authorization. Therefore, we try to wait a little longer. There is a very simple form to fill out. It should be self-explanatory. I will receive a list of everybody who signed up, and I will confirm with you that it went through afterwards. It's the same as any other year. The only difference is you're e-signing at the end instead of literally signing, and there is no handkerchief to pick up. Any other questions?
Yes, Rabbi.
Yes, Helen.
Just to clarify, in past years on the microwave, because of the glass tray, you've had us cover it in a lot of plastic wrap.
Correct. You can do that. Or what we just do is we remove it. We just do it without a tray. It works also.
Okay.
What about koshering a warming drawer?
That's tricky. I'll get back to you. I'm not sure how we, it's machokas, I'm not sure how we paskin.
Okay, because what we've heard is that you put some sternos in it to try to heat it up. But if you can get back to us, that'd be great.
Yeah, I'll get back on that.
All right, thank you.
Anything further?
I have a question.
Yes.
When you kosher your stainless steel sink,
yes,
just with hot water without a Evan.
Yes.
You usually are supposed to put a rack on the bottom, but I don't have a rack. Can I be Makel this year?
I would try to get a rack. Again, well, if you wouldn't, it wouldn't be Trev. But again, after we kosher it, you're going to kosher with boiling water, right?
I did kosher with boiling water.
Okay. Right. So again, it is best if you can have a rack so it doesn't touch it directly. If not, you can use aluminum foil or contact paper would also work. But the Evid, if you didn't, it would still be kosher. Anything else? Everybody should have a good Shabbos, and we'll talk before Pesach. Take care.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Rabbi.